Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from an undisclosed location, this is Real Spoilers, episode 221, The Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
So before we jump in, let's go around. Everyone can introduce themselves before I forget.
This is Dan.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom.
Now, I feel like I needed to go, this is Dan. Yeehaw!
Why didn't we do our Western names?
We have Western names?
Yeah.
What would those be?
Dapper Dan Graney.
I don't want to be a dapper person in the West.
Yeah, they don't
mustache wax.
They don't typically last very long.
Those are the guys that always get killed because you can't stand them.
I have no idea.
Oh goodness.
Good try, Kevin.
Yeah.
Good try.
Enough of this. A real quick shameless plug. Don't forget that you can find us on iTunes. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. And we've got a Facebook page. You can go there as well. Facebook.com/RealSpoilers. You can comment on shows. You can share it with your friends. You can download pictures of us and hang them on your bedroom wall.
Please don't do that.
Like Tiger Beat
magazine.
Yes. You can
this week's Joey Butts.
You can collect our trading cards and trade them with your friends.
We'll have bubblegum that cuts your cheek.
Soon, yeah. Don't forget about Real Spoilers Go on the App Store.
We should find a way to be like, you can download like commentary tracks for movies.
And I think they did. It's called Riff Tracks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Dang no, it. Ours is Riff Tracks.
Yeah, with CKS.
Yeah, we spell it properly.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Unlike those ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah.
So
debutantes.
Debutantes. Dilettantes.
Yes. They're also kind of debutantes.
Yeah, they are very petite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw them at Cotillion a couple weeks back.
They're very proper.
They were drinking mint juleps.
They had their pinkies up with every single drink. It was nice.
Oh, goodness. So that's what I'm doing next week, actually.
Are you?
I'm going to visit the set of the new
movie. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I thought you were going to finishing school.
No, yes.
I guess I always thought those were already done. Are they not?
No.
They haven't started yet?
They're filming them right now. They were writing them, and so...
They're filming one next week, Joe.
That's pretty cool. I just thought they were done.
I'm curious... Because we have, you know, some friends who are on the show.
Yeah.
Who at the time, I think, like when we...
I think there was a little bit of a...
There was a little bit... When at the time, it was like right around... This was all fresh.
Right.
And they were...
They were left out of it.
I think they were...
I'll just say it.
They felt like... I think in their words, they had been retconned.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I think things have changed since then, right?
I think they're
participants in some way.
To some degree that they've been brought on board.
Well, they were in that big show, but that was different. Not the TV show.
The reunion show was done by Riff Tracks.
I didn't know it was Riff Tracks.
But everybody was there, right?
But everybody but one.
Okay.
Josh Weinstein, the original, J. Elvis Weinstein, the original Tom Servo.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he was the assistant Mad. He was Dr. Forrester's assistant before TV's Frank.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And he was only in the KTMA episodes and episode one on Comedy Central, or season one on Comedy Central. And then he left. He was not a part of that reunion.
Actively not a part or just...
Yes, he chose not to participate.
Interesting.
Yeah. He kind of, from what I understand, got a raw deal because he was there at the beginning.
Right.
So like Trace, who's Dr. Forrester and the voice of Crow, was there at the beginning and like has a, had a small ownership stake in the show. And so did somebody else. I forget who. But J. Elvis Weinstein did not get an ownership stake because he was participating at the age of 16. And so he was not old enough to sign a contract, from what I understand.
Gotcha.
So he did not get a stake. And at the time, it was kind of like, well, this is just something we're doing. And
right. Nobody thought it was going to be what it is now.
So,
oh, that's a bummer.
So, but anyway, that's where I am going.
That's pretty cool.
Next week.
And that's, so it's Frank.
Yeah. Drop some names.
Yeah. Who's on the show now?
Jonah Ray
from Nerdist.
Yeah. And Patton Oswalt is on it, and
as TV as Frank's son,
as son of TV's Frank.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's pretty good.
And Felicia Day,
okay,
is on it, and Hampton Yount.
I don't know who that is.
He's a comedian.
Okay,
and I forget who's the other comedian. Like one's doing Servo, one's doing Crow.
Okay,
Bill Hader.
No, I don't know. No, I don't think, yeah. But probably names people recognize, those are probably, and I'm sure Joel will be on there in some capacity, but okay. Not as a regular. I mean, he doesn't, you know, it's supposed to be about the new generation.
That's pretty cool.
Right.
Pretty good stuff. It's for Netflix, yeah?
Yeah, it's got picked up by Netflix.
Is it going to be all at once?
I don't know how they're doing. I'm assuming, because that's how Netflix does it. Does their stuff.
That would be awesome. But hasn't there been one or two they didn't do all at once? Or
I don't think so.
I thought Netflix
House of Cards was all out there.
No, I'm thinking like maybe that Chelsea Handler show is week to week.
Well, I think that's because it's a weekly show.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Sense.
Like, it's
okay.
Topical, and she can't record 15 at once.
But, you know? Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. So, anyway, cool. That's what it is.
That would be awesome.
That's
I can't
cool.
wait to see.
Yeah.
So, you're going to a set visit for one of the episodes?
Correct.
Okay. Cool.
Yes. And that's all I'm allowed to say.
Aha!
So.
Interesting.
I had to sign a NDA? Legal thing and everything.
So. Wow.
Do you have a SAG card?
I do not.
Mm. Okay.
I know.
So he doesn't have any lines.
Do you have a sad card?
No. No. Do you have a mad card?
Yeah. With okay. one or two D's.
Two D's.
Yeah. So anyway, that's it for that. I guess let's dig into our movie, shall we?
Yeah. So pew, pew. I feel like I should preface this by saying this is one of my favorite westerns of all time. The original. Like, I love that movie a lot.
Seven Samurai?
Yeah, The Seven Samurai. Which, you know what? I also just recently, like, I watched them all.
You watched Seven Samurai?
I did. I have the Criterion version.
Nice, I do too.
And it's like, I'm not a huge fan of that movie. I appreciate what it is. Mm-hmm. It's definitely, it can be a little hard to watch.
You think it's just too old?
I think it's a very old movie.
Yeah. Is it because you hate Asians?
It's not because I love Asians.
It's not because you love Asians.
Yeah.
What?
No, it's not.
Comma.
Because I love
Asian. Oh,
yeah.
I
have you?
And also,
have
I love Asian
your browser
cinema.
History.
I don't
lately?
Have to.
Yeah,
but I love Asians. Like, also, I like legit Asian cinema. Like, not right. the other genre sure, of sure, Asian sure. cinema.
And what other
What's
genre
the other
would that
genre?
Be? Yeah.
I don't know. When you look up like certain search things, histories,
like your own,
like my own,
your own search.
Yeah. So, you know, they remade this with Yul Brynner and Charles Bronson.
Uh-huh. Phyllis Diller and Dave Foley.
What?
Bug's Life.
Oh, wow.
Bug's Life.
You're right.
A Bug's Life
you're
is magnificent.
You're totally right. It is. Yeah. I didn't think about that. I was like, Phyllis Diller?
Yeah.
But I forgot, like, in the original... Magnificent, the original American version.
Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
Which they made how many of those?
Three.
They made three sequels, I think.
Yeah. We'll get into that, how? When it's like the Seven ride again, it's like, no, they don't.
It should have been the Magnificent Seven, air quotes, ish.
Well, Bruce Wayne had to go around with his new recruits.
It's like going to see the band Chicago. Like, there's still eight guys on stage.
Okay. But, you know what? Yeah. If they were to tell me that, like, if DC didn't screw up their entire stuff, and they're like, look, we want to make the Dirty Dozen, like the Suicide Squad, like Dirty Dozen.
You mean what they told us they were
going to
do.
And if they said, we want to do the Justice League like the Magnificent Seven, and I was like, you're on the right track, DC. And then I would have been, and then they did their movies.
How would you do the Justice League like the Magnificent Seven? Though?
You just said it. Bruce Wayne goes around collecting
well, I know,
the other six, and then they fight the bigger threat.
That's they already have logos,
right?
That's what LexCorp did.
That's what the Magnificent Seven is. Yeah. Like it's Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen going around collecting the other guys to fight the bigger threat.
That's true.
Like that's what you know.
Yeah. I mean, Seven Samurai basically invented that premise.
Exactly.
That's been recycled.
Yeah. Over
ad nauseum
and over.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't want to compare. Like it's tough because there are a lot of characters that are similar to the originals, but then in this version, like there are some characters that are combinations of other characters and brand new characters. So if you haven't seen either the Seven Samurai or the original Magnificent Seven, I can't recommend either one enough. They're fantastic.
I have a remastered. They did a more recent remastering of the Magnificent Seven.
It's a good look. That's the one that I have.
And I bought it last year, and I meant to open it and watch it because it's still unopened like most of my Blu-rays. I think some people can agree with me that seems to happen. You buy them and then
feel like you don't get around to watch them right away.
Yeah, and then you just don't. So it's like, oh, I wanted to this weekend, but I just saw the movie.
It's a good looking copy.
I wanted to rewatch it. So at this point, I haven't seen Magnificent Seven stuff.
It's cleaned up, and I think they might have
upped the color a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's also
they added an eighth too.
They did. Yeah,
there's eight of them. Now.
There's it's
a bonus feature.
D'Artagnan,
and that guy's
D'Artagnan.
But that guy's only so-so.
Yeah.
It's like the Magnificent Seven
and So-So Eight.
And the So-So Eight guy.
Yeah.
This one they take a lot. So there are certain nods to the original. Like for instance,
they ride horses.
That
was one of the biggest.
There are cowboy hats.
There
are guns.
But Yul Brynner wears
oddly
all black.
Enough, no bullets.
Well, it's Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah. I watching the original. I was like, you didn't fire a bullet out of that gun.
Let me ask a question real quick. So, does Denzel Washington being African American in the West, was there a racial tension type thing?
Oh, have you not seen did you not see it this week?
No, I did. They didn't. In my
opinion, say half the actors in the original one were Spanish or Italian anyway.
Yeah,
I don't think Spanish would be a big because they're in the original they're in Mexico.
Yeah, that's true.
So
that's true.
Like,
I guess what I
they weren't foreign there,
right?
I would have thought having seen the movie, I would have thought there would have been more tension, but it didn't seem to like really come up, and so I didn't know what they were trying to say.
I think it came
up
like once or twice, like when he rides into town the first time.
That first time in the bar. When he's hunting the guy who's the bartender and bringing him to justice.
You mean he's doing his best Schultz from Django?
Okay, how can they completely rip that scene off from Django? I'm talking about when I saw him do that, let me pull this Warren out of my... they stole that.
I will say, I had a couple issues with it. I love this movie. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I did like that scene
if you were Quentin Tarantino watching that, you would go, what the fuck?
If I were Quentin Tarantino, I'd be like,
I don't think Quentin Tarantino. I was going to say, I don't think he uses that kind of language.
I was like, Quentin Tarantino, the king of the ripoff.
Yeah, but I mean, we're talking about, I mean, I know he pays homage to a lot of like really older movies and stuff. Like that movie came out 2 years ago or something, and it's the same scene with almost the same dialogue. Like I just thought really weird.
So the guy who wrote this is Nick Pizzolatto, who wrote the first two seasons of True Detective.
Uh-huh.
And I think he had something else in the pipeline that got...
And Galveston.
He did write Galveston. Yeah, he wrote the book Galveston. But also, like, I just wonder if that was... You know, that second season of True Detective, he's a pretty lazy writer.
I think he started that scene.
A lot of that stuff in season one that people thought was so deep about like time is a circle and all
not
that
as deep.
He stole that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The True Detective tangent is like the reason that was as good as it was is because McConaughey was killing that performance.
Yeah.
So like you didn't care.
Yeah. I still haven't seen
and
it.
That second,
you've never seen the first
I own it
season?
On Blu-ray. I bought it last
dude.
In the second
Friday.
Episode,
sealed,
I'm sure.
In the second episode, I remember looking over to Ellie and going, "He is amazing in this." Like he was.
That
like,
was the reconnaissance.
Another level. Yeah, it was because it was like all of a sudden it was just like. I mean, we've seen him be good, and we've seen him be lazy, but that level of acting was just like, I mean, it was chilling.
I need to watch
the
it.
Old,
so
old,
good.
Old man Russ and then young man Russ is just, oh, man.
Wow.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
So when he first rides into town, he gets some looks, and in that bar, I couldn't tell if it was more of a racial thing or they were all like
part of
this guy's crew, and they were getting ready to defend him, like part of his gang.
I think it was a racial thing.
But then you never heard about it again.
I think that was smart because that's not the movie they're making.
No.
Right.
No, correct.
And I don't think if it was the movie they were making, I don't think Denzel Washington would have done it.
Probably wouldn't have done it.
Nope.
I don't think there's any need to.
We got that movie. It's called Blazing Saddles.
Right. It just seemed weird that, like, I just couldn't tell if it was a thing or wasn't because it was only when he wrote in and then you never heard about it, which isn't a problem.
I think you don't hear about it again is because he dispatches, like, five guys in one sitting.
Yeah. Right.
So, like, all the people are like, you know what? I don't want to die. Yeah. So I'm not going to say anything.
Okay.
And then from there, he's always, I mean, he really only...
He wears the white hat.
And he only so really speak, like, deals with people...
White hat, good guy.
At that point, and from that point on, he really only deals with people who already have known and accepted him.
Right.
Or he's trying to kill.
Right. Like, there's no in between. Like, it's, you've got your group of friends, your group of your team, and then everybody else, with the exception of a few townsfolk... They're the enemy. Like, everybody, there's a whole scene we'll get to where I'm just like, is everybody in this town a bad guy?
Yeah.
Because I think they killed everybody. Literally.
Yeah. Okay.
And I don't mean that, like, they literally kill everybody in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, almost no.
It was
there
crazy.
Is a lot of killing in this, and I don't have a problem with it because it was
awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
But yeah, so in the original one, it's Yul Brynner, kind of like there's a guy that won't be buried up on this cemetery because he's Indian. So Yul Brynner says, you know what, F this, I'll do it. And he and Steve McQueen hop in a carriage and they take it up there and they kind of fight off the town a little bit. So one of the things that Yul Brynner constantly does in that movie is he's shooting people in the hand. And this one, Denzel Washington does the exact same thing. Like he's initially he's not killing anybody. Like in that bar scene where he goes to claim the bounty on One-Eyed Jack or whatever,
cool.
He doesn't kill anybody.
Yeah,
like except for the bad guy.
Yeah, because he didn't want to come in town and start murdering people.
Right, he shoots a gun out of somebody's hand.
Yeah.
Or he shoots the chair leg and
out from under him. Yeah, that was cool. I like that. He killed the one person that was wanted.
Right. And then, you know, at this point, so he comes in the bar and then Chris Pratt. And it, you know what?
I honestly took that as kind of a racial thing. And
where he doesn't want to kill anybody?
That, like, he knew he was never going to get the benefit of a doubt.
Right.
Like, it better be a guy that's got a warrant out on him.
Yeah, otherwise.
Because if it's just me versus you, they're always going to believe the you because the you is white.
You is white.
Like, and that,
They drop a little current day stuff in there that I was like, all right. There was no need for that.
Uh-huh.
There's a scene later where they've got the Magnificent Seven are together. Chris Pratt is teaching the one guy how to shoot, and he's like, "What does this mean?" And he puts his hands up, and he was like, "This means don't shoot." And I was like, "All right,
really? You thought that was?
Oh, I didn't
like Antoine putting a
absolutely. I do." Yeah, hands
I
up.
Didn't
the,
even
hand,
connect
the whole
that.
Hands up. Don't
connect.
Shoot.
We live in St. Louis. Yeah. I didn't even connect that.
As soon as I saw it, and I was like,
"Yeah, I didn't." Maybe I because didn't. You have your.
I'm a little bit closer to it than
some police officer,
yeah.
But yeah, I didn't. I just took it as him mocking him because it was like such an. He was.
I think it could have been taken two ways
because he's like, say, teach me how to use guns, and
right.
And he takes his whiskey and then tells him the most obvious thing that
right.
you could ever be told. You know,
and I will say this is a different Chris Pratt. This is a different Chris Pratt than we have seen up until this point. Like, he's not as jokey.
Likeable.
He's also not as likeable.
He doesn't play up, but he's not
But he's not Star-Lord. He's not, you know, he's not anything that we've seen before. And I appreciate that. Like, I appreciate the fact. And I thought he was going to be that from the previews they show you.
Right.
You thought he was going to be doing the Chris Pratt thing.
No, he's kind of a drunken D-bag.
Yeah. Yeah. A drunken,
he's a good guy, but he's a D-bag. He's a drunk.
And it's different than the Steve McQueen version. Yeah. Like, the Steve McQueen version... He's a straight up good, like, he's funny. They do kind of reference
the cooler from Great Escape.
Yeah, exactly. But they also that he's kind
of the same actors in it. So
yeah,
oh, it's true. You do. Yeah. The lover aspect, like, that is played up in the original as well as, you know, kind of in this one.
Yeah.
So they, you know, he kind of joins up. Chris Pratt joins him in the town and he's like, "You got anything going on?" He's like, "Nah, not really." He's like, "How many do you got for this?" So they tell him this whole job. I guess we should say. Over actor McGillicuddy, who just like that guy chews up. I can't think of his name. Starsgard.
Peter Sarsgaard.
Oh, who just chews up every scene he's in, and it's fine. Like in Green Lantern, it was awful. But like I was like, he knows what he's doing, and he knows what kind of movie this is, so he doesn't care.
Man, the first time you see him with that jar, shaking around that jar.
Yeah, I was just like
where
what
are
we doing?
Going?
What's happening?
And then when he gets there, I'm like, well, that was a long walk for a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah. And I just feel like...
Isn't he a businessman? Like, doesn't he have better things to do than to waste his time coming
Apparently
in?
Apparently not. there's a small town, and they're, you know, they're in the church, and they're arguing over this guy who's trying to take over, who's trying to buy their land. And then he walks in and kind of, you know, does the whole, his whole thing where he's like $20 an acre or something, like some tiny amount of money for the land. And
basically, there's gold on this land.
There's gold. There's a, there's a mine further away, and this is like the go-between between the mine and wherever. So he wants to buy
the whole town,
right?
And he's offering them a third of what their houses are valued at. And the cameo by Matthew Bomer.
You know what? And I've said it from the get-it. Make that guy Superman.
We know, Joe.
I'm just saying. Like, even in this one, where, like, they play up the big blue eyes, and, you know,
because he has really blue
eyes. I'm just saying.
I can't believe he was in it for, like, 10 minutes. That was just weird
when
to see Matthew Bomer.
And I was just like, oh, he's going to join. Like, he's one of the guys. He's going to be one of the seven that we haven't seen yet. And I was like, oh, yeah, never mind.
So he basically, when Peter Sarsgaard.
Right.
So when Peter Sarsgaard walks out of the church after saying, he says, when I come back in 3 weeks, you either accept $20 or
I'm gonna kill everybody.
You don't want to, you better run. Like, you're going to be killed.
Right.
Why wouldn't you just kill everybody?
That's what I'm saying. Like, just kill them. Why
wait? Willing to,
if you're going
to,
why wait?
I guess if you get half of them, you only have to kill half as many people.
I guess that's true.
It's just a time management thing.
Well, bullets were expensive.
Bullets were expensive back then,
But basically, Matthew Bomer, they start kicking the crap.
He challenges him.
They start kicking the crap out of the priest that's like, you can't do this. And then he's like, what kind of man are you? And he walks over and shows him. Shoots him.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of...
And you need to remind people, back then, I don't think priests were so rapey.
They weren't so rapey. They were pillars of the community back then.
Right, so it was sad if you shot a priest or something.
And also, like, there is, you know, there are... What was the one movie I just watched? Did you ever see Executive Decision?
A million years
ago.
I was wearing
Steven
acid wash.
Steven Seagal. Yeah. Steven Seagal, Kurt Russell, right?
Yeah.
So when that movie comes out, Steven Seagal is a massive star.
Yeah.
And they kill him in the first 10 minutes.
Which I thought
10 minutes.
Was one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Right.
You're like, oh.
So
they've never done that in a movie before.
Well, it's just like you don't expect to lose your biggest star.
Yeah, it's the guy.
They don't do it often.
They don't do it. Yeah. And I will say in this one, when you lose a certain character, and I'm just like, oh, all bets are off. Like, there's nobody that's... And, you know, they kill a bunch of characters.
There weren't a lot of three-picture deals in this movie.
There were not. There were not.
Which is cool, though. I like that
they
were...
And they do that in the original.
I
like
that they
kill a bunch of the original.
Real stakes, even though these are big-name actors. Like, I would say a majority of the Magnificent Seven, like four, are known actors, you know?
Denzel, Pratt.
Well, no one knows the Indian, the Mexican,
D'Onofrio, Ethan Hawke.
And then
other super friends, Black Lightning. And
I mean, he's a good martial artist, but no one knows
who was the Indian on Super Friends. The guy that grew. He was like,
Jolly Green Giant.
And he would say, Montauk.
He would grow, whatever.
Yeah. Him. And then
but, like, for the
Samurai,
part,
the Samurai Tornado guy.
Yeah, that's right.
The multi-ethnic team.
Right. Yeah.
It's definitely the Magnificent Seven of Benetton.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Now, I will say the Indian made it a lot longer
Apache Chief.
Apache Chief, yes.
Apache Chief. That was both funny and offensive. Hey, man.
I didn't make that up. I'm like Hong Kong Phooey over here.
But I will give him this, that the Native American guy lasted a lot longer than the guy did in Suicide Squad. I will say
yes,
that.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Spoilers.
And by that, we mean the entire movie.
Yeah.
So the sister of... It's the wife.
It was the wife of Matt Bomer's who kicks this all off.
Also,
basically.
Like, I don't think they could get her boobs out anymore without it being rated R.
Really?
Like, yes. Her boobs were out 98% of this movie, just enough where they could squeak by with a PG-13. Like, everything she's wearing is low cut all
the time.
See
where your mind is. I mean, he's got a pregnant wife.
I paid attention.
Do you guys think it was that revealing, her
I felt
old
like
Westy
her,
outfits?
I felt like her... I will say that I did notice, but I felt like
it was probably with the times.
Her outfit was getting lower cut the deeper we got into the film.
That's what I thought. Yeah, exactly. So she kind of comes to this town where Denzel has dispatched these, you know, he's...
Oh, he pulled a Django.
He pulled a Django. Yeah, it's exactly
exact
what he...
Exactly.
Actually, he didn't pull a Django. He pulled a Schultz.
Oh, I hate it when I pull my Django.
It's awful. Yeah. It hurts. It's, yeah.
I'm like limping for a week. Got to wear special shoes.
I love that movie, and I just watched it, I don't know, a month or so ago, and it's like, to see that scene, I mean, I'm sorry, but it was a little more than an homage.
No, it was,
and again, and I really liked this movie, and I'm not saying it ruins it, but... What are you doing?
I remember seeing you like, wow,
replicate
right.
an exact scene.
Yeah,
when it's
exact
like scene, a Western line movie, line. And it's the same thing. You have a warrant, and he goes, "I'm a, you know, like I'm a warrant officer in the state of." The lines are the same. Yeah, like yeah. I don't know, yeah. It was just weird, but
maybe that was the speech they made them all give.
That's an interesting point. That's an interesting thing. Is like, yeah that could be where like they had.
I mean, maybe it was accurate.
You know, I mean, maybe like you know, in like 300 years, somebody may be like, man, every police gives the same.
You have the
Miranda
retro
warning.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, there's a reason.
No, I guess that could make sense. But it's just like I just remember Dr. King Schultz being like, I am a deputized whatever in the state of, and then this guy says
same thing. Anyway, so she sees the whole thing go down, and then she realizes, okay, we could. Rather than like spend money to buy guns, we can hire this guy. So she goes to Denzel and she's like, you know, they're taking our livelihood. They've killed my husband. They've killed all these different people.
And I love how Denzel keeps riding. Because first it's her friend that's chasing after him, and then she finally starts running along, holding her dress up.
Yeah,
she's like, "Are you really gonna make me run after you?"
Well, he doesn't start taking notice until she says the name.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
As soon as she says
the name,
that's when.
I just liked the character that Denzel plays. I liked the way he played it. I like that he was all about his business and moving on to the next thing. And it's not that he's a bad guy or a jerk, but it's like he has the mindset of. You know, he's going after these bounties.
Well, also, so like Yul Brynner, as much as, and I love old Westerns. I think old Westerns are some of the greatest missed gems of cinema that, with the exception of like the John Wayne stuff and some of the Clint Eastwood stuff, there's some good stuff out there.
They were the superhero movies of their
absolutely,
time.
They, you could do them on the cheap and they would make a bunch of money.
Yeah.
But Yul Brynner is the good, like he's the straight up. It's a weird reference to make. He's the John Cena of that movie because there's no gray area. There's black and there's white. And every choice that he makes is for the betterment of the people and to keep them safe.
How about he's the Superman?
I can't make that reference because Superman kills people all the time now. He's not doing anything
sorry,
for the betterment. He's not doing anything for the betterment of anybody.
He's the Batman. Of the,
also oh, doesn't work.
Wait a minute. Damn it.
But... Yeah,
he's the
so,
Deadpool?
No. Well, kind of. It's a better reference than Superman at this point. Where this the way Denzel plays it is he's just doing it like he's not there's a gray area for him where Yul Brynner there was a black and white.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
So I like that she's chasing after him, and then when she mentions that it's Sarsgaard's character,
he stops and he was like,
he starts
oh really
listening. and she's basically, I mean, they're poor, they don't have any money, but she's like, the payment is everything that we have, we're going to give you everything.
Okay, so this is a line from the original one where he goes, I've been paid a lot for my services, but I've never been paid everything. That's verbatim a Yul Brynner line from the original. So he goes back to town, and this is where he kind of sees Chris Pratt again, and Chris Pratt's trying to buy his horse back. And he was like, here, you know.
He said the guy stole his horse, but he really drunkenly lost it in a car game.
Chris Pratt is a drunk in this entire, But he's charming, sort of.
Like, I want to say he's a less likable Doc Holliday.
Which Doc Holliday?
Tombstone.
Okay. I like Wyatt Earp, but... Like
the Tombstone Doc Holliday
I also really enjoy, but
the Val Kilmer one without a doubt is just amazing.
That's good stuff.
He is so damn likable and charismatic in that movie, you know. And like, I feel like Chris Pratt is trying to embody the same spirit. He's a drunken, but he's making jokes and he's supposed to be lovable. Like, it never quite got to that level of likability because I liked him, but you know what I mean. Like, his character was kind of,
you can't copy that performance.
Yeah,
like if you copy it, you're. It's going to be obvious that you're copying.
But his character was kind of deplorable at the same time. Chris Pratt's like, when he's trying to teach the guy gun moves later on, and I know it's kind of funny that he's like, give me one drink and I'll teach you a lesson.
Right.
And then he teaches him a crappy lesson. I thought, well, he's going to end up with the whole bottle.
Yeah.
But then you're kind of like, he's just mean. And the guy's like, take it. And he walks away. Like,
one of the issues I take for this movie is everybody is flawed.
Yeah.
Like, every single character has a darkened past. And like,
does Denzel?
Yeah, I mean his.
But I mean, spoiler, is he?
We'll
no,
get
but
to
I
that,
mean,
but
he,
yeah.
But
he's conflicted.
Not,
how about that? He's conflicted. Rather than,
but I don't
just
feel like
being,
he ever does anything. I mean, he has a motive, but I don't feel like he ever does anything questionable.
I feel like in the original, though, and it's been a long time since I've seen it, but I feel like in the original there was a lot more ambiguity as to whether or not these guys were really all going to help this town.
Right. Well,
and
right.
I,
yeah.
And I never really felt like that with these guys.
You think they were always, their intention the entire time was they were always going to help?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Or, and even though
they were in,
and
were
even
just,
in the original one, I felt like there were certain guys that I felt confident that Yul Brynner's character was always going
right.
to help.
Right.
But
Steve McQueen was always going to stick with him.
Yeah. But outside of that, it kind of shifted as to whether or not I felt like they were really going to help or if they were going to bail.
Right.
Or even turn.
Right.
But I never felt like that in this one.
By the way, Charles Bronson, I didn't realize he was that big. Like, in the original one, he is jacked. He's like,
yeah.
He's a massive human being.
Yeah.
And then you see him in Death Wish, you're like, what the hell happened?
Well,
age.
Yeah.
Age caught up with you.
Yeah.
One thing, so in this movie, going back to like comparing it to the original, one thing that I didn't really... And again, I like this movie. I thought it was, I guess you could.
I got a huge kick out of it.
Felt,
I
yeah,
had so
I was
going to
say one thing.
I enjoyed the movie too. Like, I'm not bagging on it, but I just felt like it. It's weird that, you know, 56 years later, we get less moral complexity.
Yeah,
that's true.
You know?
That's a good
this
point.
This felt like a summer blockbuster. This is a perfect summer blockbuster.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this would have played perfect in summer. I thought it was a kick-ass movie.
Actually, I think they were smart to hold off on it.
No, of course.
Because
but it's a summer movie, though.
Well,
you know?
Avoid
I think if they had realized how weak the summer movies would have been, they might have went
this
ahead
This is
and
one
put
of the better
out.
Movies
yeah.
I've seen
yeah.
of... since beginning of summer.
I think it, yeah.
But so my point is it's a great movie, but I thought all the way that they got the guys to join in this movie was very, oh, I'm not doing anything. Like,
well,
I just,
I mean,
they just
yeah,
got him
like,
so easily.
Because in the original, I remember there was the whole thing about like the one guy thinking that Chris
Robert,
Adams was holding out. Like,
yeah.
The, like there
Robert
has,
Dexter, I think
there's got to be more money than this.
Well,
or this town has to be more valuable.
The entire time
reason.
He's like, so what do you got going on? You
right.
Guys, he's like, no. And the entire Chris Yul Brynner is like, no, man, there's nothing there. And he's like, all right, I got you.
Yeah.
I'm picking up what you're dropping.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in.
I just feel like these guys just so easily joined up. So,
well,
you got the Mexican guy.
The Mexican
he's like,
guy who was
going like, to... I'm gonna stop looking for you. Oh, okay. Like,
but I mean, like, yeah. If you want the best bounty hunter in the country to stop looking for you...
He doesn't know who the hell this guy is, though.
He him, though. Like, yeah. That's the thing is he found him in, like, some tiny cabin in the middle of nowhere.
I just feel like some wanted guy. I don't know. It's just the fact that he's like, well, I won't be looking for you. Okay, so fine. The Indian guy. Yeah, I'm kind of off doing my own...
kind of stumble
I'm kind of off doing my own thing for my tribe. Okay. Okay, he's joined in. Like... Again, I liked all the characters. It was an awesome movie. Great action scenes.
I felt like, they felt
like
they wanted to get to it.
They did. They just assembled
and you know what?
The team.
I
don't?
Appreciate that.
I think you're both right, guys.
Yeah.
I agree. Like I felt like they assembled them a little too easily.
Yeah.
But I also felt like I didn't need this movie to be 30 minutes long.
It got
longer.
It going. Yeah.
Right. That's true. Yeah.
You'll get to see that in the Justice League movie.
I will. Yeah. I'm sure I will.
You'll get to see
I'll get to see the
formation.
Yeah. Zack Snyder's like, I have a 4-hour director's cut that explains everything.
That's
2 hours is Bruce Wayne walking around and, you know.
And then the question becomes, which director?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the J.J. Abrams cut. Perfect. All right, good.
It's more of a nitpick. I mean, that's just really my only complaint is I just felt like it was a little too, like, the way he gathered him up was just kind of, like, nonchalant.
Yeah.
Like, oh, here's my team. Okay. Like,
I hear what you're saying, but I appreciate.
Because if you remember The Dirty Dozen, like, it's, I mean, that's a good 30 minutes of the movie of him just going around.
Picking
people up.
Yeah, they split up, and then they got their guys, and they came back, and it was, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah, we're ready to rock and roll.
But no, you know, but for a 2-hour movie... And this movie's 2 hours, and I felt like it could have maybe shaved 15 off. Like, to have them assembled in 10 minutes, I just thought it was weird for such a long movie. But anyway.
But, I mean, I feel like you have to establish those characters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you have to give them a little bit of backstory as to why they're on the team. And
maybe you needed more of a montage.
Ooh, a montage, you say?
A montage.
So we get Ethan Hawke and Storm Shadow. Isn't he Storm Shadow and G.I. Joe?
Yeah.
Yeah. The other ninja for Hydra, for Cobra. So, yeah, they're, you know, and these are, this is the James Coburn, the Bai Hung Lee. Anyway, he's the James Coburn character where he's he's quick with a blade, and that whole scene, the whole scene in this one where they're the guys are fighting, like they're challenging him to a fight. That's right out of the original.
That was a cool scene.
That's it's
with
the
hairpin. That was cool.
That's right out of the, like James Coburn is challenged to a duel, and he's like, "Nah, man." Like James Coburn, he's a cool cat. Yeah. Like he's always a cool. He's a cool cat. Up at like even in Payback.
Yeah,
like I love him in Payback. <He's a good
laughs> that's just mean.
Where he's you know he's
what he about Monsters Inc.
Who is he in? Well, he's he's not as cool in that. Unfortunately, he's the bad guy. Spoilers. Yeah, so he's assembling the whole team, and they get Chris Pratt and the Mexican go and get Ethan Hawke and the other guy, and then they all kind of meet back up, and they get Vincent D'Onofrio,
who's like unrecognizable. I mean, between the weight and the beard, and he's been putting on weight for a while. But I remember like
you were like Men in Black.
I was like probably like 10 or 15 minutes into like after his characters appeared in the movie, and I was like, I thought Vincent D'Onofrio was in this. And then it was like oh crap, that's
him,
that's Vincent.
One of the best lines in the movie.
That bear's wearing
people clothes.
And it was funny, and I think what
I love that,
that was a good line.
I think what finally made me figure out it was Vincent D'Onofrio is because I was honestly like, who is this guy and why have I never seen him before? Because I was like, the way the weird like squeaky voice that he did,
it had to be a choice, right?
I was like, okay, that's clearly
such
not
a big guy to talk like.
I'm like,
right,
that's clearly not in the script. That's clearly a choice the actor made. I'm like, and like for this guy I've never seen to make such a ballsy choice in a major role like this, I'm like, where? And then I was like, oh, that's Vincent D'Onofrio now.
So okay. Kingpin, buddy.
Yeah, he's got this. He's got a giant beard, and he's definitely put on weight. But I think
he immerses in a lot of roles, though.
Yeah, he does.
He's a method guy. Yeah, I think.
I mean, you go all the way back to. I mean, look at him in Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh yeah,
and
big
you,
time.
You don't even recognize the guy.
No.
Yeah.
That's. I mean, he's Law and Order: Criminal Intent.
Yeah,
he's Sherlock Holmes with as a procedural, but he's fantastic on that show.
Joe, I have an audio clip for you to help you out here.
Byung Hun Lee.
Is that how you say it? Say it again.
Byung Hun Lee.
So Lee, that's what
you're
saying.
Your accent is amazing, Kevin.
That was. Why did you raise the octave on your voice?
Yeah.
Well, it was a choice.
It's a cultural thing.
Yeah. So they pretty much assemble their whole team, and then they go to the town, and immediately,
oh man,
they are
the amount of bad guys that have taken over.
That's what
this
I said.
Town.
I was like, is the whole town
this has
bad
to
guys?
Be a 15 minute shootout? And I'm like, because I'm thinking, okay, they planted a guy, the sheriff's in on it, they planted a few guys, like the three guys that meet Denzel out there,
right?
But then these guys come out of the woodwork, like,
yeah, so they're coming from everywhere.
It's 22, what,
something
remember,
like
he,
that. Yeah,
they when it's all said and done, Sarsgaard says, you're telling me seven men killed 22
of the best guns we could ever buy.
Yeah, that money can buy.
Right.
So I think it's 22 people. So it's like, damn, they planted a lot of people. But I will have to say the action scenes, the shootouts in this movie, which are Western action scenes, and that's what they are in this movie, are awesome.
So what I appreciate is, you know, I have the complaints about the quick cuts and the fighting and hand-to-hand stuff. The advantage this movie has, there's no hand-to-hand fighting.
And there's no quick cuts.
There's no quick cuts. But it's also like you don't have to do a quick cut if you're doing a gunfight.
Sure.
Right.
You know, like you don't have to do it.
No, it's awesome. The action is, I thought it was a great Western shootout.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, all the ones they did, it just.
Pratt pretty much does the I'm your Huckleberry, like where he walks up and he's kind of like leaning up against the post and he's just like, you know, kind of tips his hat and, you know, the guys realize they're in trouble.
Yeah.
At the last, you know, but they don't realize it until the last possible second
when they start to get surrounded. I loved it when the bad guy whistles and then the guy on the rooftop is basically supposed to take out Denzel.
Right.
And you see the guy and he just falls over.
Well, no. Denzel's got the great line where he's like, I don't think he's going to answer you.
Right.
And then he falls over. And then the Indian's behind him.
Yeah. I'm just like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
And then
that Indian was
then
cool.
He just starts picking people off with the arrows.
Yeah. It was a big old, and then you get to see everybody's skills at that point.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like the Avengers.
I love
where
how
you get to see what
Vincent,
everybody can do.
Vincent D'Onofrio is just tackling people.
He's like a linebacker, just running people down, and he's got this hatchet.
He
and just
tackled,
cutting people to pieces.
He tackled not just a person on a horse. He tackled a horse. He tackled the man and his horse. I am like,
that
wow.
Horse, he knocked that horse down.
It was the basis for Mongo.
But no, it was awesome. It's a great reimagining.
That scene where he punches the horse is still one of my favorite scenes. I love that scene so much.
And you hate horses.
I do. Goddamn horses.
They're so chewy.
Yeah. So gamey.
Yeah.
I thought it was a fun team. I thought they had good chemistry together, you know.
I like the chemistry between Pratt and the Mexican.
Yeah.
Like, I like where they're constantly going at each other. And then, of course, at the last possible second, they are buddies. Course, yeah. You know, like, that's the way that works.
I just Mexican guy would have killed Pratt for saying the things. I just, like...
Why, though? In 18, just, whatever, like, you could... it wasn't...
I don't know. He was really drunkenly making fun of him.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I
think in that day and age, like, that's just...
Second-class citizen kind of thing.
That's like, just what it was.
That's probably pretty minimal.
Man, I just thought, like, with him, the way he wasn't just, like, kind of giving him a light ribbing, like, the way he was going on about him being Mexican and the jokes, I'm like, God, I just...
and that whole scene where he's obviously drunk and like the first time they meet each other, he's like, oh great, we got a Mexican, wonderful, and he's just like poking fun. It's a different Chris Pratt than we've ever seen
before. Funny,
and
you know
what, I'm interested to see what kind of Chris Pratt we get in that new
Passengers.
Like, what,
you know, I've heard some people that watched the trailer and didn't like it, and I saw the trailer for this one, I thought it looked good.
I don't know nothing about it. All I know is it's...
You didn't watch the trailer?
No.
I saw the trailer before this one. I thought it looked cool. Like, the idea of them going...
It's a romantic movie, but set in, like, sci-fi.
I don't think it's really romantic. I think there's a romance element in it, but it's basically this huge, gigantic ship that's being sent off, and they're in cryogenic sleep for, like, 30 years, and Pratt and...
Jennifer Lawrence
wake up after 10 years because of some issue, and you don't know what it is, but they basically have to survive, and there's something weird going on, and, like, it visually looked really cool, and I don't know. It looked like...
That's what I'm saying. Look, I wonder if, like, obviously Chris Pratt, his bread and butter is that Star-Lord.
Yeah, he's not
Peter
being,
Quill
he's
kind
he's not
of
playing a smartass, and he's playing more of a Jurassic World, but less of a smartass character.
Jurassic
it's more
World is that
packed.
Weird.
It's more
so
like,
this is like Jurassic Park is that weird hybrid of Star-Lord and this character.
Yeah, this is more like just the action star element of that in Passengers, I feel like, and here it's more of that, but like less likable.
He's less if you take out the star, like, I don't know how else to refer it other than like that version of a character that he plays. Mm-hmm. If you take that Star-Lord aspect out of the Jurassic World character, it's just that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's more that.
So yeah, they destroy this like quickly. They dispatch with like these 22 people,
and they're counting
quickly
the whole time. And then
did you get? Six?
Isn't it Chris Pratt? That's like, I got seven.
Yeah, well, no, Chris Pratt originally says six, and then the Mexican's like, I got six. He's like, oh, I got seven.
Yeah, and he gets like, a one up. It would be the
right. So they know that he's coming back, and he's just kind of like, look, you may have had 3 weeks. He's like, by the time that one rider gets back there, he's coming back quickly. So we've got like a week to get you guys ready.
Yeah. The town is like completely against them trying to fight because they know that this guy is capable of killing them all. And so they're not really.
Well, also that's kind of an aspect of the original where it's just a farming town. Yeah. Like they're just farmers. There's nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, so they have to train these farmers to, get ready. So you get some pretty funny montages where Ethan Hawke is trying to teach these guys to shoot.
You mean drill sergeant Ethan Hawke?
Well, this is also right out of the original. Like, this is a scene out of the original where I think it's Charles Bronson, I think, is trying to teach them to shoot, and they can't hit anything. Yeah. And Charles Bronson's like, you know what? Just hold it by the other end and just swing it like an axe. Like, you're better off that way. But during the initial fight, it's pretty obvious that Ethan Hawke has some issues.
He doesn't shoot one person.
I think he's got I think they're saying he has PTSD.
Yeah. That's what I took
from
it.
Chris Pratt sees it, and he sees him not pull the trigger. The guy's riding away.
Yeah, there's a guy riding away at the original
and he's just
first
he's
fight.
Like
Chris
and
he Pratt says,
he's
take
like
the
you
shot.
Got him. Take the shot. Take the shot.
He says shooter.
And he doesn't. He lets him get away.
But then his friend says the gun was jammed.
It wasn't jammed.
Oh,
that's him backing him up.
That's him.
Yeah, for him.
Okay, that's him backing him up.
That's what I took it the other like I was confused. I'm like, were they saying he had an issue? Because he obviously did, but the gun was jammed too. I didn't
know.
He was covering.
Yeah, no, he was covering for him. So while we're doing this, Chris Pratt again gets in his ear and he was like, no, man, you gotta show him you got to show him how he's like this guy. He killed like 45 people in the battle of whatever. And they called him the Grim Reaper or something. And to where finally he gets him. It was kind of like that scene in Suicide Squad where he's just like, I was just trying to get you there. Like, we're good. Right. Yeah. Where he finally gets Ethan Hawke over that hump and Ethan Hawke just destroy. Like
He takes the head
in
off
seven
of the
in
target.
Seven shots. Like he's shooting a pattern. He takes the head off the target and he just kind of flips the gun at him.
Yeah, I was hoping that meant for the rest of the movie he would be
Like, so I, knowing what I had known, and I was like, I have a feeling he's kind of this character as well. So yeah. he's going to go ahead and do yeah. his thing. Yeah. So they're like, they're digging trenches and they're planting bombs and they're doing, you know, doing all kinds of stuff.
It was cool. They go down to the mining.
They raid a mine, yeah. a mining company.
All the people that work for that company, right. that Sarsgaard
They
owns.
Bring them all in and they take yeah. all of their ammunition and they take everything.
Well, I like
it.
They're like, we need to go get more ammo. And then they go to the mining right. community, you know,
and they start picking
and
people
off. And they pick them all off. And one of the mining guys, like, they killed everybody. and then they basically recruit them. And then they open the doors.
Right,
and it's all
saying,
the explosives.
Like, they kill everybody.
Yeah.
There's nobody. Like, all of the bad guys are yeah. going to die in this movie.
Well, so think of how light Sarsgaard's payroll is after this.
Yeah. He's making all kinds of money.
He could just make more money.
He was up to like $25.
yeah, right. He could make more money by not taking the town, I think, yeah. at this point.
So they get back and they start setting up the town. And this is where Pratt tells a joke where he's just like, you know, my dad used to tell me this joke about a guy falling off a 7-story building. And he's like, every floor... He was like, you know, how's it going? I was like, oh, not so bad.
So far, so good.
And then, you know, and that is another line. That's another joke, right? out. That's a Steve McQueen yeah. joke that he tells in the original.
That's a callback like 4 more times before the end of the movie.
Well, I think that they are laying the groundwork for what's coming.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't say that until.
Oh, no, he does.
He says it when he gets shot. And then as soon as he gets shot the first time, then he starts saying it. And yeah. he's like, oh, that's actually kind of smart. Like that script writing where they're,
it made
you
sense.
Don't
like,
notice it at first. Yeah. And then at the last second, you're like, oh, yeah. like, all right, that was pretty slick. That was pretty good. So they got the whole town ready to go. And then
as ready as
they can be. And then so they have like a one more sit down and Ethan Hawke kind of goes off the deep end a little bit with the PTSD. And he finally says, I'm gone. I'm not doing this.
It was weird that his friend, played by Byung Hung Lee,
sure.
got really drunk at this point.
I think his friend was gone. Like, that's what I think that was like. They had been together for so long.
No, he got drunk first because they're like, where is he?
Yeah, and but
like,
Ethan Hawke had just like.
No,
Ethan
Hawke asked where he is or whatever.
Ethan Hawke, like Denzel Washington comes around. Like Denzel Washington and.
Oh, you think he was drinking because he knew he left?
Yes.
I thought he left while he was getting drunk,
no.
and so he
no,
didn't
I
know
No, I think
he
started drinking because he knew, A, he knew he was going to die, and B, his buddy wasn't with him.
Huh, okay.
Because, like, Ethan Hawke and Denzel Washington have that argument
yeah.
outside the bar, like, on the corner, and then he rides off.
Oh, okay.
Because, right, because Ethan Hawke's trying to sneak away, and Denzel's like, what are you trying to do, just sneak out of here?
Yeah.
And so he kind of rides his own way. Denzel comes around the side, and then that's okay. where you see... D'Onofrio and Pratt and all those guys kind of standing together and they're like, where's the other guy? And they're like, he's inside.
I gotcha. Okay. That makes more sense. And I thought that he snuck out on his friend cause he was distracted. I didn't realize he did it because of
yeah. Yeah. That's the way I interpreted it.
Okay. Interesting.
But this is another where D'Onofrio is doing that high pitched voice. I was like, man, that's a weird choice, but all right.
It works. I'm with it.
So,
it's
yeah,
so atypical for me to think some big burly guy is going to talk
that's
like
whole,
this.
That's the
it's
thing.
Great.
Yeah,
yeah,
he's a smart actor.
Yeah.
But also, it wasn't over the top. Like, it could have been.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
It would drop in and out.
Yeah.
But I think that's.
He was also a man of few words. Like, yes. The thing was is that you didn't get a whole bunch of speeches from this guy. When he did, he just said he was very soft-spoken and said very few little things. And it just.
Yeah. Also, I thought it was interesting that he was an Indian scalper.
Yeah,
like they definitely made
I didn't know how his
that.
Relationship was going
to
be with the Indian guy. You know, I was kind of worried that they were going to butt heads because because
Chris Pratt even had the line about, you know, they're not
paying
government's
for that anymore,
not paying
yeah.
for scalps anymore,
yeah,
right? And he's like, well,
all right, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, so I was
that,
a little worried.
That bears weren't.
It never really became an issue. So
no, well, I think it became an issue at the end of the movie. I think there's an issue with another Indian.
Yeah.
Where
yeah,
I think
well,
it'd be,
yeah.
you know what I'm saying? Like,
one,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like they're all ready to go. The Indian at this point has, ridden away and I guess he's just scouting. Like he's scouting yeah. to figure out when they're going to show up.
The sheriff is near.
What'd he say?
when they were doing their montage though of setting up all the digging the ground and putting the explosives in and stuff, I was like, okay, did they get the fake rock ridge?
I know, I was thinking the same thing.
Didn't you think that like they're getting ready and I'm like yeah and the toll booth
right
yeah.
right
man, it was just
somebody's gotta go back and get a Loaded yeah. times.
First thing I think of, man, they just don't make them like that anymore.
No, they can't.
But yeah, no,
they, unless you put something out on your own.
Yeah,
you know, like no studio will so ever good. Release a movie like that ever.
Closest
again.
Thing we ever get to that is going to be Matt Stone and Trey Parker.
Yeah, true. Maybe you think Key and Peele could get away with it, or do you think they're
they offend everybody? I mean, they dress up and they do whiteface and everything. Yeah,
that show's on Hulu. And I'm just rewatching it all. Yeah. That's great.
I would. You could go back.
Yeah, it's so good. You messed up now. Hey, Ron.
Yeah. So the ending guy comes back and says
they're like a day dawn. Out. They'll be here by dawn. Yeah. So, you know, this is the point. This is where they all kind of sit down.
We should say sunrise for Tom because he has PTSD too.
Yeah. Sorry. Sunrise. It's a different kind of PTSD. But yes. So they all kind of, you know, Denzel's like, look, if anybody else wants to leave, I'm not going to fault you for it. He's like, this isn't your fight. And they're just kind of like,
you have my sword.
Yeah, right. You have my axe. And they're all just kind of like, yeah, man, we're here. Like, it's whatever. So then the big fight, Sarsgaard shows up with like 300 guys. Like, he's got,
I would say, about 5 million.
Sounds about right. Yeah, literally.
You see them riding and it's like a super wide screenshot. Yeah. It's just like horse after horse.
Right. But they're all in line. Like, I also like, it's like that scene that we talk about where like in Independence Day, where the four like Humvees are riding down the dirt road all together. Yeah. Like, this is what it was with horses. Like, it was the same scene.
Like, you know,
horses.
You have a whole desert you could ride like next to each other.
Don't get too far ahead.
Yeah.
And then there's no other way to describe it as all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
They, you know,
another great action scene though.
And this is where the
movie's 2 hours and I feel like in the middle, I'm not saying I was bored, but I think it drug I think I would have been bored
had the actors not been
it
as
was
good,
good
as they
were. Yeah. But like 15 minutes less, I think, because by the time the action scene starts, you're like, yes, this is what I'm here for.
I like that little reprieve though. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I like getting a little bit of reprieve and then ramp it back up.
Because once it starts, it's like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
or something.
I was like, it's like a 30-minute action sequence. Yeah. And everybody's, you know, killing everybody, and then I've always said there are certain times when there are certain actors where you're just like, no, man, he's not going anywhere. Like, it's Chris Pratt.
They're gonna
kill Chris Pratt. Guess what?
Nobody's safe.
They kill Chris Pratt. Yeah.
I love, though, but this is a callback to the card trick and the drinking.
It is.
This is an exact callback to when he was being, you know, sorry to say, to the kid and trying to teach him about guns and fighting and all that.
It's never about the trick.
It was never about the card.
Right.
And so I like that callback. That was clever.
Well, I knew it,
but I mean, I liked it because I'm like, oh, he took some of that down.
Right. The first one to go is Vincent D'Onofrio. Vincent D'Onofrio.
So, Peter Sarsgaard has an Indian. We should say they each have an Indian, right?
Yeah, but the Magnificent Seven's Indian is cooler because he has wicked face paint and he's awesome with a bow and arrow.
It almost looked like he had an American flag painted on his face at first, like when it was zoomed out, because it's like blue with white dots.
It's red and black.
But it looked almost like blue with stars, but it was just like black with white dots. Yeah. But I'm like, red, white, what?
It's like, this is my country.
This doesn't make
choice.
Yeah, that was weird for it. But anyway, he's just like really kind of stealthy and he's athletic and just, you know, whatever.
Quick with the bow and arrow.
And so they have like Arnold Schwarzenegger Indian. Like, he's just like this big, mean looking.
He's the
just
counterpart to Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
D'Onofrio kind of comes out. I think D'Onofrio just killed somebody.
Yeah.
And then
out of nowhere, though, we don't see their guy, but all of a sudden, boom, arrow.
And then he keeps like in the way it should be, he just keeps going.
Yeah, like, he goes down like Boromir.
Yes.
This is a Boromir
scene. Yeah.
This is, and I thought he was going to keep going and kill the Indian.
That's what I thought as well.
I thought he was going to do one of those Boromir, keep on swinging until the last.
He finally drops. And that was a really, again, a credit to Vincent D'Onofrio as an actor. Like,
an understated death scene. Like, the way he drops to his knees.
But like, his facial expression changes and like, he has the moment of clarity almost. Like, just the way that. Yeah,
like, I'm gonna die,
and then he dies.
Oh.
And then so
I liked it too. He kneeled down. He was on his knees, and he just died sitting up on his knees.
Yeah, like, yeah. Right. And then so the Indian goes into the bar where
the sister of the girl, Matt Bomer, the
wife.
I'm sorry, I keep thinking sister. I don't know why, but I was just hoping she wasn't taken.
She wasn't within the first 15 minutes. Yeah, she's fine. So like, it's pretty obvious that he's gonna have his way with her, and then all of a sudden.
I didn't know that as much of a gruesome kill.
I thought it was all of it.
Did you think it was rapey? I thought he was just going to like really gruesomely like kill her.
I honestly don't remember.
So this is where our Indian shows up. the good Native American and dispatches with the bad one.
What was his character name? I'm going to look it up right now. It's just that you don't really ever...
Red Wing.
Was it?
I don't know.
It would be funny if his name was like Steve.
You know what's funny is that his real name is... Did you look at the credits?
No.
I'm like, he has a really interesting... Because he... I mean, he's Native American. He looks full Native American, right?
No.
His name is like Martin something. And I just thought it was really... Yeah. I'm literally... I watched the credits.
I only said Red Wing because that's Falcons.
Martin Wasserstein. Yeah. It's very...
His name is Martin Sensmeyer.
What's his character's name?
Oh, the Connecticut Sensmeyers?
So I just thought it was going to be something like, whoa, they got a real... Comanche, you know,
yeah.
And not saying he isn't Comanche, but it's just his name is Martin Sensmeyer.
What was his character's name?
The character name Red Harvest.
I was close. All right,
you're thinking of Nightwing, though. I think
no, Red Wing is Falcon's Falcon.
Yeah. Oh, okay,
yeah. So he dispatches with that Native American.
It was
pretty
cool.
Quick.
The reason why I mentioned the good guy is more like athletic and stealthy is like the big Indian comes after him and he just kind of shanks him like under the armpit, yeah. Kind of like knifes him, like he goes underneath him. It was a cool way.
Yeah, it was a cool little fight
whipped
scene.
Around him and
then yeah. Just knocked him off. I was like, one of the things I've always loved in westerns is when guys fall off balconies
through,
I don't know
through
why
a table, tables.
Like just one of those tropes that I think is always fun.
Or
like,
on the piano.
You can't be alone because they do it so much.
Right.
Yeah. It's, like it's they, just fun.
We're going to put a guy on a balcony. Yeah. I better see him fall.
Yeah, right. He better fall off that balcony and go through the table, by God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's because of your affinity for wrestling. I'm pretty
no,
sure there's
it has nothing
I'm
to do
pretty
with
sure that there's a
I
pretty
see
close
a guy
connection.
Fall pretty
man,
far.
You
fall
better, better powerbomb that guy through a table.
Which
if
came
not.
First? I mean, maybe the Westerns led to the love of wrestling.
Yeah, I could. It's true. It's true. Hulk Hogan was always the white hat good guy.
I'm going to say Westerns came first.
Well, he was up until 1996, and then
what
wasn't.
Did I?
Why did
I feed the beast?
Continue. See, but you did it this time.
I know it was reflex. It was just like, but not all.
Too late. Yeah,
just wait
so
for
this
his
is
refractory.
This is when all of our good guys. This is when our good
he
guys
doesn't have one. It's wrestling.
He doesn't have one. Just keep going and going and
true.
Going. This is when all of our the good guys start getting knocked off.
Yeah.
So Ethan Hawke and his buddy are up in like the bell tower.
Yeah.
And
they've kind of got the sniping positions.
Well,
so they're
also,
picking people
we
off.
Should say that they have. You think they've dispatched almost everybody at this point, and everybody made it out. And then they show
second
up
wave.
With a Gatling gun
literally.
And just start tearing through the
did
tower.
Did they do that in the original?
No.
Okay, so that's what I thought.
No,
this
wild,
is the Wild Bunch.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember watching, I'm like, I thought that was the
Wild
Bunch.
Because
the Wild Bunch was all about the end of the cowboy. Like, it was the end of the cowboy's era.
Yeah.
And part of what, and so
that's a great movie. That's a violent movie.
Yeah,
that's
a
great movie.
It's Sam Peckinpah. It's,
yeah,
you know, like
it's
he made an entire movie about a guy's head in a bag.
Yeah,
like it's
that's true.
So my question is, so I mean, I don't know the answer to this. Like, were Gatling guns a thing?
I'm sure they were
back then.
You're post Civil War at that point.
Yeah, because like that was in the Wild Bunch. They bring out a Gatling gun at the end.
Yeah,
and, like the whole point of that movie was these guys are they defending a town too? It feels like, or they're doing something.
Man, I just know if the time period was later than this.
And they,
I just didn't know.
They know that their way of life is dying,
out of style,
and that cowboys are the railroads going. Technology is killing what cowboys do, and so
they might be defending a town.
It's been a long time.
I feel like that's. Yeah, maybe. All right.
But and so they, the Gatling gun was kind of a nice metaphor of like the technology is literally taking them out. They can't keep up anymore.
In the original one, the town actually turns on the Magnificent Seven and sides with the bad guy. Cordova, I think, and then they leave. Like the whole
Isn't
crew leaves.
Calavera or something or Calvera?
Cordova?
I don't remember.
I don't know. But they all leave, and then Yul Brynner is like, "Yeah, man, we're going back." Like. It was a weird thing where, like, the bad guy is like, once you leave town, we'll give you your guns back. And then
Calvera.
All right. Yeah. Close. I had one letter different. So, like, they give in the original one, they give the guns back. And then, of course, everybody's like, yeah, let's just go back.
Yeah.
And they go back. And this is, this is where they start to die off in the original one. So, yeah, this Gatling gun is just tearing through everybody. And then our heroes.
Man, it's gnarly.
Our
this thing is
falling.
Ripping people to shreds. All the good guys, like the townspeople are getting torn up.
Well, also, like, one of their guys is like, hey, we got people down there. And he's just like, uh-huh.
Yeah, and that's obviously for this character that Peter Sarsgaard's playing. It's like, he doesn't care about anybody.
No. So, he's, Chris Pratt ends up getting shot. And he's like, we got to get we got to get up there and take that gun out.
Yeah.
So Chris Pratt riding, I feel like he's riding by himself.
Yeah, because there's guys chasing him. Right. And they're picking him off from
the two
in the tower.
Ethan Hawke. Right, Ethan Hawke. So Ethan Hawke shows back up and just starts, again, doing what Ethan Hawke does. And doing what the character should do, not Ethan Hawke.
Yeah, I'm like, when does Ethan Hawke? Is he like a coward that comes back in every movie? What is?
But yeah, so they're taking the guys out, and then they both get shot from the Gatling gun. So now we're three down. Chris Pratt is getting riddled with bullets as he's riding up to the where the Gatling gun is.
And this
is.
May have been one of my favorite scenes. I just love the way it played out, the way when he was almost dead and he goes to light a cigarette and a guy's about to take him out and the main guy running the Gatling gun's like, no, and he goes to light his cigarette. Yeah. Like, I just liked it. It was really cool.
It was a weird sense of honor that you didn't expect to see from the bad guys.
And it was just, it was a slow scene. Like, they took their time with it. And
so
Pratt
just kind of does a Pratt fall and he falls forward. He falls forward.
Nice try. Yeah. Like, that's not a Pratt fall. Did he go through a table?
Yeah, I guess not. No, he doesn't go through the table. But, like, he falls down, and I remember thinking, you can't kill Chris Pratt. I feel like Chris Pratt is on that level of actor now where you just expect him to make it through a movie.
Certainly.
And then he, like, out of nowhere, he sits back up, and he was like, I always liked that one-eyed Jack, and he's got a stick of dynamite, and he blows everything up. Like, he blows up the Gatling gun. He blows up himself.
You knew it was coming. It was so predictable, but I loved it. You know,
It's one of those things where, like,
he riding after the Gatling gun for? He's got to destroy it, so he has to have dynamite. But, like, I loved watching it.
It was just one of those things where I was like, he's going to make it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's Chris Pratt.
Gotcha.
You know? Like, it's like the Steven Seagal thing. We're like, oh, shit, Steven Seagal just died.
Yeah, but once he starts getting shot 50 times.
Well, that was also
10
minutes into the movie.
That's true. Yeah. But still, like, you don't expect Steven Seagal. When Steven Seagal, I think, was, like, the number two name on those credits.
Yeah, I remember, like, guys I saw it with, they were mad. And I was like, I don't know. I think that kind of made it interesting. You know?
That was be called Psycho.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true. That's a great example. That's a great example. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's another good one.
When that happens, you're just like, what?
Yeah, I didn't. That's a very good
example. I love
that
movie.
That's a great movie.
Because
who dies in that, though? I don't remember.
William Peterson.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just comes out of the blue. Yeah. It's kind of like The Departed, too.
That's Willem Dafoe in that, right?
Where you're like,
oh, it is kind of like The Departed.
Where you're like, whoa. Nah. No?
Oh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
I want to watch that again. That's all of those moments.
I just picked up Mean Streets.
Yeah.
I forgot how much I love that one, too.
So the Gatling gun's taken out.
Taken out everybody.
So at this point, we've got three guys left.
So you've got four.
A Vasquez from Alien.
Yes. Yeah.
The two guys, D'Onofrio and Pratt. That's four. So we have three guys left.
Yeah.
You've got Ethan Hawke is dead.
Bai Hung Lee is dead.
The two guys.
D'Onofrio. Oh, you're saying four is dead. Four are gone.
I said we have three guys left.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Three guys are left.
Yes. You've got Denzel, the Mexican, and the Indian.
And most all the bad guys are cleared out. So at this point, Sarsgaard with two cronies come riding into town thinking everybody's cleared out.
Also a great scene. Like, it's just one of those scenes. So, like, the two cronies go into the bar and all you hear is gunfire.
Yeah.
And then the one guy kind
of,
like,
one of those guys walks out
and
you're like,
just like, ah, and then he just falls face first. And
then one guy goes through the window.
Like in typical Western movie fashion.
It's just a funny shoot.
If you're going to get somebody falling off of
you got to have somebody go through a window.
Off of the thing upstairs.
Right.
Yeah. You got the balcony. Then I want that window.
You can't not go
that window. Better be broken by the time this movie's over.
But what a great, now this is Denzel.
This is Denzel
acting all the way here. I mean,
So he kind of corners Sarsgaard in the church that Sarsgaard had burned down in the beginning.
Yeah.
And this is where you get, like, his backstory, where he's like, did
you finally figure out why he's doing this?
Did you send these people to Kansas? And he was like, I guess, I don't know. And it turns out that Sarsgaard had killed his mother, his sisters, and they tried to hang him. Because, like, the entire time he's wearing, like, a thing around his neck.
Which I never noticed until he took it off. Like, I didn't notice.
The only reason I noticed is because Yul Brynner doesn't wear it.
Oh, okay.
And the entire time he's wearing the same outfit that Yul Brynner wears.
So wait a minute. They're going all hang him high?
Kind of, yeah. I was thinking Pale Rider.
Next time you try to hang a man, you gotta finish the job.
Right. And then he's got got the whole thing on his neck.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Western tropes in the flick.
But, you know.
You didn't see this?
No.
It's really good.
You notice how quiet he was?
Yeah, that's the only reason why I haven't.
Well, Tom, but he's playing Candy Crush.
Yeah, right.
Bubble Witch 2. I ran out of lives.
Didn't one of our listeners think you were spamming
Nicole Zhu?
Saw that you were playing Bubble Witch 2. Like, I think Tom's account was hacked.
Because she know?
And we were just like, no, it wasn't.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, so he kind of gives him the whole speech. Okay. And then you think he takes the scarf that he had been wearing and starts to choke Sarsgaard with it.
Oh, and we should say, though, at this point, that Sarsgaard, who's been this badass, like, just terrible villain,
he does exactly what the villain should do.
Turns into a coward immediately. Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. Are you a religious man?
The whimpering coward.
Yeah.
And you think he's got this little Derringer, and you think he's going to kill him, and then
I thought he was gone.
You hear a shot, and you know what? At this point, they've killed Chris Pratt, they've killed Ethan Hawke, they've killed Vincent D'Onofrio. I was like, really, maybe they will.
This was really well done because usually you can see these things coming from a mile away,
right?
And I just didn't.
The sound editing was really smart. The way Denzel played it was really smart.
He goes wide eyed. You hear a shot after you see his little tiny gun, and Denzel like opens his eyes wide, and you're like, oh crap! And then I thought, well, maybe he's just injured, and then they show the wife, not the sister.
Had shot him with a rifle and shot him.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we end it. They do a whole, and just like the original one where they pan back and you've got like the four tombstones, same deal, except this time
they have
got
a little
names.
Token of each one.
Yeah. They've got little names on it.
But there's a token, like they've got his like the bottle, the little windmill.
Right.
The windmill
didn't make sense to me.
Was D'Onofrio telling them to paint those?
Well, they even showed him like used them in battle at one point. Like, but I couldn't figure out what they were using them to show.
I think
were they like
was the a, wind, there was a reason that
I
they
think,
were there.
I feel like once the wind from the horses made them turn, like they knew to. They set off the
Maybe
explosives after they went by them. I know the explosives went off when they passed them, so I was thinking when they started spinning, there was. I don't know if it was.
I don't remember,
Bell
but there was a, there was a reason that they had those.
Yeah,
and that's how it kind of ends. And God damn it, if this wasn't
the three remaining guys ride off into the sunset,
and that's so in the original one, it's. The only two that make it out alive are, of course, Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen.
Yeah.
That's the way it's going to... Spoilers for you, since you haven't seen it.
I've seen it. Oh, right. It's been a really long time.
But yeah, so like... And that's,
they gave you a 56-year head start.
I just kind of feel like that's... Like, of course, you're not going to kill Yul Brynner. And you're not going to kill Steve McQueen. Especially not Steve McQueen. Yeah. And this one, it's just kind of like...
in The Great Escape.
They do. That's true.
Yeah.
That's another one.
Doesn't he die in The Great
Escape?
I thought he did.
No. He ends up back in the cooler.
Okay.
No, he does not. He does not die.
I thought he gets caught. I thought because he didn't kill with the motorcycle. I thought he got shot.
No. He got caught up.
Too.
He actually got caught up in the barbed wire.
The barbed wire tries to jump the barbed wire.
The movie ends.
Tom, respect your elders.
most of them in the actual escape, a lot of them got killed. Coburn makes it. Steve McQueen makes it, but they bring him back, and he ends up back in the cooler. And he's got his ball, and he's
I thought he died too.
No.
And that's how it,
most of them do.
And but this was, it was fun. It was a blast. It was a lot.
I thought it was awesome. I loved it.
It had its flaws, but they were overshadowed by how much fun I had at it. And I think this was a really good remake.
Yeah, I thought they did a good job.
I thought they did it justice.
And I think like when everybody's like, oh, you shouldn't remake, like,
but they
remakes and sequels. And I was like, okay, well, the originals are remakes. And it had three pretty crappy sequels.
Yeah.
So,
right.
And a very mediocre television show.
Right.
So
right.
It's like.
They've mined this thing a lot.
Yeah, like, so this thing isn't some sacred ground that no one can touch.
Right.
Like, let's
I agree.
Let it go.
I'm glad they did it justice, because I was a little worried at first when they first started talking about it, and I thought they did a great job.
No, I thought it was a lot of fun.
I want to see it again for those action scenes. I mean, those seriously
were
some of the... We just haven't seen a lot of Westerns recently.
Like, I think we've seen an interesting...
What's the last big... I'm talking about real Western, not, like, Western feel, but I mean, like, Western
Bone
shootout.
Bone Tomahawk?
Yeah, which I never saw.
That was
you,
good.
Because you love Kurt Russell.
Yeah, I know. I liked it.
But, like, what's the last big Western shootout type movie? Like, we just don't
Django?
Get them. Yeah, that's true. That's probably the, you know, that was,
Hateful
what, 2012?
Hateful Eight, I was thinking. Hateful Eight, for sure.
That was so contained. I'm thinking more, like, Hateful Eight was so contained. I'm thinking, like, a big horse riding shootout, guns a-blazing kind of thing.
The
like,
Revenant?
That is kind of a Western.
Yeah.
But you just don't see that many
Django,
like this.
I mean,
for some reason, like this type of Western stands in its own little category, and you just don't get them. And so seeing the shootout and all that.
I wonder, like we talk about with musicals, where like there's the whole generation that missed musicals. I wonder if there's a whole generation that missed Westerns.
I think I don't think it's as big of a jump to get into a Western as it is a musical, but I think it's a generational divide in that I think they're apt to be dismissive of Westerns because they think it's like it's something that their dad
bumpkins.
Or grandfather
or bumpkins
you know
old-timey movie
it is old-timey
just,
but there's some great Westerns. And I'm not a big Western guy, but there are some phenomenal
that was kind of my introduction into cinema was my dad liked Westerns you know, like the John Wayne stuff and all that, so that
and
was
funny
spaghetti Westerns
I love spaghetti
and it's
Westerns.
Funny because my parents got divorced when I was like
11 or 12. And so, like, so my dad wasn't around to watch those movies, so right. I would always skip them. So I didn't start watching Westerns until I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, it's this huge genre. And like, I'll just pick the good ones and start there.
Yeah.
And was like, oh, my God, these movies are great.
They're great.
So,
yeah. And there's so, some, there don't. Look, like any genre.
Oh, absolutely.
There are some pieces
of garbage. I love comedies,
but,
and there are some really dumb ones. It's, you know, I wouldn't, but you wouldn't use those to say, see, all comedies are stupid.
No, so. Absolutely not.
Right. Well, I am interested to see what Dan's video recovery
for
will
sure.
be this week.
So the, we have sort of the resurgence of the Western. It seems to happen every like 10 years,
yeah.
you know, where somebody comes out and, we're, you know, tries
think,
to bring the Western
Tombstone
back.
Tombstone was the one from
Tombstone,
20 years ago?
Yeah, and then I
Silverado.
Think
Silverado.
Oh, Silverado.
1985.
Oh,
yeah. Silverado.
310 to Yuma was good like 10 years
yeah.
ago. That
no,
remake.
But so Silverado is actually the one I was thinking about for this, is that 1985, I mean, there really wasn't a lot
no.
happening. And it's because of the clout that Lawrence Kasdan had.
Yeah.
Because he wrote and directed that. He wrote it with his brother. And you know, if you haven't seen it, it's a great
Danny Glover, right?
Danny Glover, yeah, yeah. Scott Glenn, Kevin Kline, Jeff Goldblum, Brian Dennehy, Linda Hunt, Rosanna Arquette, Jeff Fahey. I mean, there's so many characters, and it's very layered. I mean, you can tell it's the guy who wrote, you know, and directed Big Chill,
right?
You know, and as well as Raiders. You know, it's got some Raiders
yeah.
feeling to it, and Empire Strikes Back. It's a great movie, a beautiful movie. I just rewatched it and I forgot how. Oh, and John Cleese in a very small role, but
oh, that's right,
fantastic
yeah.
in it. I forgot how it's if you watch it now, you know, shot in New Mexico, and they really invested in capturing the sort of the vistas and the landscape. Oh, and Kevin Costner,
yeah.
Who this was his breakout role.
I was like, this is his first.
This is his, like, this is the pay.
Is the payback for Big Chill?
For Big Chill.
Yeah. yeah.
And so this is like the first time.
We should
time.
Probably explain to people that don't know the story, but in Big Chill,
yeah.
he's the. They all go to a. The people have a reunion. These baby boomers
due
have
a
reunion.
Due to a funeral.
And Kevin Costner is the dead guy.
Yeah.
And there were supposed to be flashback scenes mm-hmm. of him
yeah.
that showed him interacting with these people, and they all got cut.
All
so
got
really
cut.
All you
so
see.
So you never saw Kevin Costner.
You see is like
him in the cast.
In
Do you
the
even
casket.
See his face?
No.
Yeah.
Oh. No. And so Lawrence Kasdan made up for it and put Kevin Costner in sort of the younger brother to Scott Glenn, and he's great in this. He's,
yeah, he kind of made it, cut his teeth on Will's Western because like he was Wyatt Earp. And
he's great in this, and it's funny.
Dances, Wolves.
Yeah. One really good thing about this movie when you watch it is just like the horse work. There's a great scene where they're all riding in, and they're, you know, usually sometimes in Westerns you would see him like up close,
yeah.
and then you see him really far away. It's like no, that is. You know, Danny Glover and Scott Glenn on horses riding at a pretty good clip. And then here comes in comes Taron, Kevin Kline. He's cruising.
Yeah.
He catches up and rides alongside of him. And it's just that, like, they captured so much in camera. I mean, there's
yeah.
no digital in this.
Right.
There's no CGI in this. And just to see, you know, it's your basic corrupt town. You know, the guys show up. They all have their different stories. They sort of become a team just because they... all are exited out of the previous town at the same time and join up. And it's if you haven't seen it, it's worth checking out. It's a lot of fun.
Does anybody shoot somebody while riding sideways on a horse?
Yes.
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 That's another
and
one.
Guess what,
Check.
Joe? They're on a balcony.
Oh,
they're riding
like
a horse
on a balcony?
On a balcony?
No, there is
cool.
actually a...
that is amazing.
And then they go out a window. That's
yeah.
amazing.
So we've got to get
Scott
all these
Glenn
done right now.
Is alongside... and going through the town, and there's a guy up on a balcony shooting at him. So
he ducks, hunks
oh,
over,
that's fantastic!
Punches down and shoots the guy on the balcony.
Through that's perfect.
Two and one. You know, he drops his gun and doesn't have a gun, and so a guy's chasing him. So he runs into a barn, up a ramp, and back outside the barn, and uses his horse and he to get the guy.
That's so
running
good.
After him.
So good.
Yeah.
Death by horsefoot.
Well, thank you, Dan.
Yeah,
so I guess that's it for this week. I guess we will go around the table and everybody can say where to find them.
This is Dan. You can find me on Twitter at DanGraney67, G-R-A-N-E-Y.
This is Joe. You can also follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, B-U-T-T-S, 21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Don't forget, if you would like to continue the conversation online, we will be there waiting for you. You can find us at facebook.com/Real Spoilers. Looks like next week we will be tackling Miss Peregrine's Home for Spastic Children. What is it?
unusual?
Oh, boy.
No.
For gifted youngsters?
I'll see that movie.
Kids.
Tim Burton doing an X-Men movie? How did that never happen?
Yeah, I don't
Peculiar
know.
Children.
Peculiar Children. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, Tim Burton movie.
We'll do that one. And maybe by next week, I'll even know how to say it.
You know, probably you can't not. Win either way. You can't. You tackle a woman or you tackle a kid. I mean, it's how do you win?
Yeah. I go.
Depends
I say,
on the kid.
Yeah.
I say, well, I mean, Joe tackles his kid, but
yeah.
Yeah, there's a reason.
So she can learn about wrestling.
Exactly.
Yes. You don't want him learning about wrestling on the street.
No, no. You got to teach him at home.
And wrestling on the outside.
Keep, yeah. It, keep so. It safe, you know.
Oh, goodness. What have I done?
So. Always watching for
you.
A chair
this
coming
is you
behind
again.
You.
This is all. Yeah.
I know. I have no one to blame but myself. The first one was Kevin, but the next two were me. So I'm just stopping it right there. So thanks for. Thanks for listening, and until next week, Flick leads Hopper into a bird's nest.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.